whenever the delegation from the Council for the Built Environment. You are most welcome. We continue where we left off the last time. We did apologize the last time that we did not have the requisite time to hear the reports of the Council for the Built Environment, and also for us to interact with the report. So this is what we seek to do today. Obviously, still we won't be able to cover everything that can be covered, but it's to give us a better sense as to where we are. So your presence is greatly appreciated. I did offer you tea and coffee earlier on, which you said my feelings were very humble and not up to your five-star breakfast that you used to. But I'm a very poor chairperson. I think I'm the poorest chairperson. Pleasant to see all of you back again, all of us healthy. Let's continue where we left off. I've been sent the note. I'm told that as observers, we have Mr. Isaac Nkosi, who is the Council for Built Environment chairperson. If you can raise your hand so that the honorable members can see you. When they read the report, they know who it is. Thank you, sir. I'm also told that we have Ms. Nineva Sithole, the deputy chair. Madam, that's the friendly face there. That's the friendly face. You are all very welcome. I'm very happy to see you, Madam colleague. The last time when we didn't see you in the meetings, we did report to colleagues that you had an unfortunate occurrence at your house, where the house burned down, and you had to go and sort out the issues. I'm very sorry to hear that, and we are glad to have you back. It's one of those unfortunate things in life. Good folks, we are in your able hands. I'm not sure who's going to lead the presentation. Who's doing so? You, madam. Okay. Please continue. Bob. Go, look here. Okay. When I rest, then. Please comment, please.
Thank you very much, Chair, honorable members. What I will do is to recap on the presentation that was done the last time. I don't know whether you got it in front of you, honorable members, but just to recap so that we can have the current issues. We started off by outlining the mandate of the CDE, which is on slide number 4, and which set out what CDE is about and what CDE is supposed to do for the country. In terms of the CDE, I just want to give a brief overview of what this entity seeks to achieve. It's a statutory body that was created in 2000 through the Act of 2000 to oversee 6 built environment professional councils. These councils include the Council for Engineers, for Architects, for Construction and Project Managers, for Landscape Architects, for Quantity Surveyors, and for property valuers. They all have their own separate acts, but the CBE is the overall umbrella council. Now, the built environment professions are important in the life of a country in that the professional expertise in the built environment actually is an asset for the country. Because if we look at government programs, two key important issues are relevant when you're looking at the professions. The first one is that when one looks at the government's infrastructure rollout program, the skills that are at the center of driving that infrastructure rollout program of government are the built environment skills that I've mentioned. Secondly, if you look at existing infrastructure and you look at especially the municipalities and you look at the service delivery quarters, the issues that people complain about are products of the built environment. People complain about lack of access to clean water, proper sanitation, proper roads, proper houses, electricity, etc. And these are all the products of the built environment. We create those products as the built environment professionals. Now, the mandate of the CBE is as outlined on slide 4. And these are to protect the interests of the public in the built environment, sustainable built environment, human resource development, risk number 3, together with number 7, which is promoting training for the built environment in the public and elsewhere, to make sure that these built environment professions are aligned to the national goals of the country, to promote health and safety standards and environmental protection in the built environment, to serve as a forum or a platform to discuss built environment issues, and to ensure that uniform applications and norms are applied across all the built environment professions that I've mentioned. If we go to slide 5, it's an extract from the Minister's policy statement, where in particular, to relevant to the built environment, the minister mentioned the issue of transformation. It's a big issue that is confronting the sector. The statistics that I go through later will indicate what we mean when we say there's a lack of transformation and a slow pace of transformation in the sector. The minister took his priorities in his policy statement from the medium-term strategic framework, from the manifesto of the ruling party, from the State of the Nation address, and then gave the department the guidelines for the next 5 years in terms of the priorities. He talked about the second more radical phase of transition, which is a more extensive and more intensive transformation that needs to be demonstrated in the next 5 years. The minister also talked about the consultations that are currently going on from a document that is gazetted, a policy document that is gazetted in May for public comment relating to the future of the regulation of the built environment. One of the models that are given, or the key model that is given in that gazetted policy is that the department is re-looking at and reviewing the CBE Act with the aim of repealing the CBE Act. And slide 6 talks to the vision and the mission of the CBE, the vision being to create an environment that is built to meet people's needs and aspirations. And our vision is also stated on slide 6. And there are four strategic goals that are based or can be gleaned from our strategic plan, the current strategic plan. The first strategic goal is supporting government priorities in relation to the built environment matters, making sure that we have competent built environment professions and professionals, establishing a center of excellence in terms of research, information, and the body of knowledge in built environment issues, strengthening the public profession with regards to the built environment. And on slide 8, the strategic goals are further elaborated in terms of how they then manifest themselves into the four programs of the CBE. The first one, which is supporting government priorities, gives rise to our program one, and the second one, which looks at the competencies and skills development of the built environment professions, supports program two of the CBE. And program three, which is the Center of Excellence, is about information and research. And program four is about strengthening public protection. I will then go to slide number 10 and reiterate the alignment of the goals to the four programs of the CBE. Program 1, Program 2, Program 3, and Program 4. If we go and zoom into Program 1 of the CBE, which talks to aligning to the government's policies and priorities in the built environment, yes. These are the four programs on slide 10 that talk to the four goals. And if we zoom into program one has got 60 projects or deliverables. The first one being the program that seeks to address skills that support the government infrastructure delivery program. I did mention that as a center of the infrastructure delivery initiatives of government are these built environment skills. So we've got a program that looks at how do we make sure that the skills that are demanded by the economy for the delivery of the infrastructure and are demanded for the country, those skills are available. The second project within Program 1 looks at supporting health and safety initiatives in construction. In this regard, last year we had a health and safety accord that was signed by the Ministers of Public Works and the Minister of Labour, as well as organized business and organized labor and the professional councils and the professionals. And this accord seeks to promote health and safety in construction. We are further this year, and you see in our program, we are wanting to make sure that health and safety becomes an integral part of the academic program as professionals are being trained at university and technical. They have a module that talks to health and safety so that when they go out there, it's part of their nature to practice proper health and safety activities in all the infrastructure delivery and the construction projects. We are also looking at environmental sustainability as our mandate did allude to that. And in that regard, we're looking at the green buildings and energy efficiency initiatives of the government and the department in particular. And also there, want to make sure that the green issues are integrated into the academic programs of the built environment professionals. The fourth area that we're looking at supporting is job creation priorities of government. In this regard, we're looking at the professionals and saying that as they design for infrastructure and for construction projects, they are cognizant of the fact that the government has said that job creation is the number one priority in terms of delivering on the infrastructure of the country. Mustn't only make sure that the proper infrastructure is available, but in delivering, we must make sure that jobs are created from the investment in infrastructure by the country. The fifth program talks to transformation. At this day, I'm going to have a slide that talks specifically to transformation, but we've got the six built environment professionals and professions that need to indicate what programs are there to ensure transformation and what targets are working towards to ensure transformation. At this point, we are working towards an unqualified audit report, that is a deliverable in program one that talks to that. Slide number 12 is a depiction of the four quarters of the six deliverables that I've talked to in detail per quarter. And if we go to slide number 13, we look at our program two, which talks to skills development. And we've got six projects there as well, or six deliverables there as well. We're looking at 150 students being reached through the rollout of math and science, because in order for the country to produce an engineer, the intervention needs to start at a basic education level to make sure that the students have got a firm base of math and science. So as the CBE, we've packaged interventions in Limpopo, Gauteng, Northwest, and the Free State to look at supporting math and science learning in under-resourced schools. And the targeting, how we've selected the schools, is that we've used the Department of Basic Education, the quantile system that says that the no-fee-paying schools, this is the category of schools from the least resource to the most resource. So we've taken the schools from the least resource areas, and most of them are the non-fee-paying schools. We are also looking at a program for structured candidacy in the workplace to make sure that when people graduate and go into the workplace, they get proper training because there are allegations that in the workplace, especially black people and women, they do work that doesn't develop them, that is relevant to supporting competencies that they require to be a fully fledged registered professional. So we're looking into ways of making sure that workplace training is qualitative. We are looking also at a workplace training project that will see 50 new graduates allocated to different workplaces. I'm going to delve on that particular initiative later, as well as 100 interns. And these are people that are in technical that or universities of technology that have got a year to spend in the workplace in order for them to qualify for their relevant diplomas. So we are organizing workplaces and training plans for these interns as well. We are also looking at a program that monitors the accreditation of academic programs at universities. for the six built environment disciplines. We are looking at, also as part of transformation, making sure that more people get registered with the professional council, and we're looking specifically at RPL and saying that how do we incorporate RPL in making sure that people access professional registration. And slide number 14 looks at the detail and the quarterly targets relating to the six deliverable in program 2. And program 3, shall you recall, is about research information on the built environment. We've got 5 key programs for deliverables for program 3. We're looking at the first one, creating a research and information hub on the built environment issues. We're looking at, as a second deliverable, researching on built environment issues that are pertinent to the six built environment professional councils. We are looking at research issues that are of priority to DPW, and a research priority on built environment issues that impact on service delivery. These will be issues that relate to government-wide infrastructure departments, as well as municipalities. I did touch on the service delivery issues that are rooted in infrastructure delivery. We are also going to be looking at research that talks to the built environment issues that impact on the economy. And in this particular instance, we're looking at the employers, the big employers of built environment professionals. And slide number 16 is the detailing of the 5 programs within our program 3. In terms of slide 17, it's our last program, fourth program that looks at public protection and legal issues pertaining to what the CBE's mandate requires of the CBE. One of the mandates that are given to the CBE is that CBE is the appeals body. So when there is a matter that any of the six councils cannot resolve, the aggrieved party then comes to the CBE for an appeal, and for an appeals committee that looks at all the matters that couldn't be resolved at an individual council level. Now, our act says that we need to make sure that the appeals are finalized within 6 days. We have, in the past, been having a problem of finalizing appeals within 6 days, but we've now put in place, and in our last year's annual report, for the very first time, we were able to eliminate the backlog of appeals that was there in the past, and to make sure that by the end of the financial year, all of the appeals were finalized within 60 days. We are also looking at the elimination of the best practice model for appeals and disciplinary hearings within the six councils, because one of the reasons why we couldn't finalize the appeals is that at the individual council level, we found that there were many loopholes and difficulties in terms of the investigations, how the disciplinary proceedings were carried out, etc. So that the matters couldn't be analyzed properly at the CBE. Now we are addressing the six councils to make sure that they've got proper structures, proper procedures to address the public appeal. We are also looking at what we call the identification of work. The identification of work is the ring fencing of work that can only be done by properly competent and licensed registered professionals in order to protect the public, so that anyone who undertakes certain engineering work, for example, or certain construction work, etc., is properly qualified and properly registered in that category. So the Competition Commission is looking at that, and we are interacting with the Competition Commission with regards to identification of work. The fourth area that we're looking at is the Engineering Council, because the five councils, their identification of work applications to the Competition Commission were submitted a while ago, but because of the complexity of engineering identification of work, it was only submitted this year in March to the Competition Commission. And just to get to give the House the picture, 20% of, we've got about 60,000 registered professionals and candidates. 70% of the 60,000 are engineers. So it's a very, very big part of the profession that we have. Number five is a corporate governance framework for the Civic Environment Professional Council. Corporate governance issues are not always properly dealt with at the Civic Council. We have developed a corporate governance framework for all the six councils, and slide number 18 then details the four programs and the four quarters, the five programs and the four quarters for our last program, which is program four. Now, when it comes to governance, our chairperson is here. The new council has been appointed. It's a 20-member council. It's been appointed as of the 1st of August 2014, and it's got various committees that deal with the detailed business of the CBE, and those are the five committees as mentioned on slide number 19. Financial information, the CFO will come to that, but I'd like to just take us through to page slide 25, so that I finish the presentation and the CFO can then do the financial information at the end of my presentation. In terms of performance and the performance enablers, we saying that now that the CBE is aligned to national priorities, we are better able to synergize our activities with the activities of the Department of Public Works and with the priorities of government. This was not the case in the past. The CBE had its own business, and there were often difficulties in aligning what this entity does with regards to government priorities, etc., the department's priorities, etc. But this has now been addressed to a large extent as our APP speaks for itself. We have that 5-year business plan. We have very active support from the GPW and very active involvement. But there are risks that we face. And on slide 26, we're looking at the risks and what strategies we've employed to mitigate those risks. The first one is dependency on third parties to deliver on our mandates. We depend very much on the council, we depend on academic institutions, we depend even on basic education to make sure that math and science is of sufficient quality to produce the people that we require. In our sector, we depend on infrastructure departments, etc. So how we have addressed that is a strategy of entering into MOUs, clear deliverables with the various partners. We depend on the Department of Labor for health and safety in construction. We depend on other departments as well. Topic of transformation is a big, big, big issue. But the slides towards the end of my presentation talk to transformation very, very in detail, in greater detail. Research infrastructure, we are busy capacitating the organization with regards to research infrastructure. With regards to the legal issues that are facing the CBE, I did mention that there's a BEE or built environment policy that is currently gazetted, that was gazetted in May. There is such a thing that there will be a repeal of the CBE Act. So it's a key legal issue that we're facing going forward. In terms of, again, transformation, I did mention we've got huge transformation issues and challenges. If we look at basic education, it's always in the papers how bad South Africa is with regard to math and science performance at schools, matric passes. Also, if you attack the statistics in terms of the matric passes and you look for passes in math and science, the percentage is very, very low. When it comes to tertiary institutions, of the 100% people that register for built environment disciplines, only 30% graduate. So 70%, what happens to the 70%? They drop out, they redirect their courses, etc., etc., etc. So it's a very, very serious state of affairs. And with the 30% that then passes, I'd like to take you to slide 11, because once you graduate, you don't become registered as a fully-fledged professional from day one. You've got to go through work-based training and then register, be assessed by a professional counselor and then register as a professional. And the statistics that we have for registered professionals, the yellow portion on top, these are the people that when there's a tender out there, these are the people that can actively participate in that work. And we see that 75% of the registered professionals are white, 15% African, 6% Indian, 4% color, 91% male, 9% female. This is the picture. So when people are saying that, and we've got 41,000 total registered, and when people are saying that our industry is not transformed, this is the statistics on slide 27 that they're talking about. When it comes to candidates, these are people that have graduated from universities and technicals, but are not yet registered. You'll see that there we've got a lot of black people that are in that category. What this says is that people are stuck because some people are candidates for 12 years, even longer. So it means that the problem is there. Not only do we have the 30% challenge, but the few potentials that we have, it then gets further discouraged from registration within our own environment. And we've now zoomed into the workplace and we've said, what is the problem in the workplace? The issue is that in the workplace, none of us have got a handle of what happens in the workplace. We can't tell you we've got candidate X that is with company Y that for 3 months is doing X, Y, and Z. People complain that in the workplace they are sent to run errands for bosses instead of doing engineering work, construction work, etc., etc., etc. They sit and they fill tenders and they become marketing people instead of being technical people that are in on site, that are in the design offices. They become the BE face of the company without doing technical work that they went to school for 5 years to do. So that is where the problem is. There is also no systematic way of tracking where people are, who's employing them, and of course what they are doing. We also have a quite a challenge in that the statistics under 11, those 63,000 people that are registered, when we look at what the country has produced from the universities, it's not everyone that is registered. In fact, with the engineers, for sure, it's only one-third of the people that graduated from the academic institutions that are registered with the professional councils. That we have got people that are not registered, but they are working, and it's still a state of affairs. The councils themselves, people complain that the councils are actually they are just gatekeepers. Their method of assessment of whether you are ready to register is very biased, it's not transparent, etc., etc., etc. Now, unlike in the medical profession, where everyone, you know that every doctor must go through this module. It's a state sponsored, it's a structured, it's a quality assured workplace training. Before anyone can progress to the next level, they must have gone through this and that and the other. The chartered accountants as well, they've got board exams that they write, and everyone, regardless of who they are, they have to pass that standard examination. We don't have a similar thing in our environment. Now, the solutions that we are proposing are on slide 29 and slide 30. Firstly, to address the issue of transformation, we have come up with a model that is fashioned around the Tuga model of the chartered accountants, how the SAICA Institute of Chartered Accountants came up with a model to produce more black chartered accountants. We've taken that model and we've tailor-made it to our context. And we're saying that we also want to form an NPO with a board of trustees consisting of the public sector and the private sector, which will be responsible for the five key programs. The first program, we say we're going to zoom into basic education and make sure that there is upliftment in terms of math and science for both students and teachers, and also that there's career awareness on the built environment professions, because other people don't even know what is the quantity surveyor. When you're talking about a QS, they don't know what you're talking about. Engineers, the chiefs, people have got an idea. Architects, people don't have an idea of, you know, what is it that these people do. So we have programs on career awareness that we want to also implement at a school level. At a tertiary education level, we want to make sure that there's a central bursary scheme so that as the government is talking about trillions of rand that are going to infrastructure rollout program, anyone that wants to study in the built environment, we can't have a situation whereby, you know, the country cannot educate its young people, and yet it's got this infrastructure rollout program that must be addressed. So we want to make sure that there is a better scheme. Anyone that wants to study engineering is guaranteed of funding or construction or architecture, etc., etc. They're guaranteed of access to funding. And then we support those students. Remember, I said that 70% of the people don't make it. So clearly there is something wrong there. It can't be that 70% of the people in this country have got a problem. So there's a problem there that needs a focused intervention. We also are looking at the lecturers in the built environment, the lecturer support program. Last year in the University of KwaZulu-Natal, two programs were closed. And with the CDE's intervention, actually, they were then reopened. Those are programs in construction management and the program quantity survey. We went to the construction sector to interact with the university and to help fund to reopen those two faculties that had been shut down completely. So, and there are many other issues that we pick up at the tertiary level with regards to built environment academic programs. The third one is the workplace training program. It's my last slide, so I will elaborate on them in my last slide. I just say that we've got serious problems in the workplace, and workplace training is a big challenge. The fourth area where we're going to use skills development to transform the sector is with registered professionals themselves, because we find that with a small pool, we also face a challenge of retaining professionals within the built environment. We find engineers do MBAs and then they go and they join banks. So on site, we don't have an engineer. The engineer is sitting in a bank. So we're looking at mechanisms to make sure that it remains attractive and viable for professionals to remain in the sector. The fifth area is an area that we're working very closely with the Department of Public Works. And it's the area of looking at the public sector and the capacity, technical capacity of the public sector. These infrastructure projects are actually conceptualized within the public sector. We did a study at CBE tracking the work that is done by government versus construction work by the private sector from 1969 up to 2011. And the highest percentage that the private sector has been was 32%. All the other years, and tracking for all these years, the bulk, we can say 70% of the work, construction work, in this country comes from the public sector. So the public sector is a very, very big player in the construction sector and in the built environment. So the best skills, the best brain, the best people must be in the public sector, because they are the people that package these infrastructure projects. They are the people that are supposed to manage and direct these infrastructure projects. The people in the private sector are service providers, but you find a situation whereby a municipality, like I mentioned the example of Mthatha Municipality, it's got 1 million people, it doesn't have a city engineer. You go to other municipalities, we did a study year before last at CBE, 13 top municipalities, 13 most populated municipalities in the country and district municipalities. And we found that there were lots of municipalities that didn't have technical people doing technical work. You find that the municipalities have employed somebody with an HR degree to run projects. It's a shocking situation. 101 municipalities. The situation is very, very concerning. The last slide, again, it talks to our intervention that we're proposing with regards to workplace training. We are saying, first of all, what we want to do is to partner with the public sector in terms of the projects that the public sector has bought, to use these projects to train people. Because if we look in the past, in the 70s, in the 60s, the railways were the training ground for many engineers, etc. We want to use the projects from Water Affairs, Eskom, Transnet, FASTA, SANRAL, Human Settlements, the Department of Public Works itself, to train people. We want to make sure that when people graduate, they are able to rotate within these various training partners. So that, because what happens now is that if you are employed by SANRAL, day one you qualify. 20 years down the line, you are actually a SANRAL engineer. We can't take you, even if you are registered as a professional, etc. When it comes to you having to address a water infrastructure program, you won't be able to do that, because all you know is construction of roads. You can't go and then be part of a team that is going to design a dam and construct a dam, etc., etc. So we want all to go to Medupi and be part of the Medupi team. Although you study as civil engineer, we can't then say that you are okay with the other environment in other infrastructure. So we want this rotational system so that you can have a feel and be a rounded, competent professional. We also want to introduce quality assessment components. In the training plans, we want the candidate to know that this person, for the next 4 months, this is what they're going to be doing, this is how they are going to be tested, that they are competent in this area, and that they are going to move from this department to this next department so that they get further exposure and further relevant workplace training in this particular environment. So we want to design a system like that, that has got quality assurance components. And we want, when a person has gone through this training, we want that to be assessed then by that professional council and ensure that because they would have had rigorous training, workplace training, they would be able to, with flying colors and with assurance as a country, who know that this is a true engineer that is not going to make mistakes and that the exit, you know, we'll make sure that there are no accidents, no shoddy work. In the work of the professionals that we unleash to the country. We are prioritizing engineers, quantity surveyors, and project managers, and maybe architects in piloting this model. We started the board agreement with the Department of Water Affairs, EFCOM, Prata to work on their project already, and that is how we want to tackle web-based training and to implement transformation in the sector. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Members have listened very carefully to you for the past hour. I must say your delegation is gender balanced. Two gentlemen, two ladies. And my weakness being honest is to say that I feel very jealous to them. All the gentlemen who are wearing ties have got better sense than myself. So thanks, keep it up. Members, questions?
Sorry, the finance.
Audio is the financial portion. Okay, let's have the financial portion and then we'll pose those questions and then go and internalize the information as we interact with the Council for Built Environment. We'll have a better tablet and for ongoing engagement. We can't do everything today, but do what we said we do. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. I think we can revert back to slide 21. Yes. Slide 21 indicates our historical performance from 2011-2012 to 2013-2014. Now, in 2011-12, we obviously managed to achieve 59% of our targets, with 41 of those 41 targets not being achieved. And in the following year, which was 2012 and 2013, we improved our performance and achieved 71% and 29% of our targets were not achieved in those financial years. In 2013-14, we managed to achieve 86% of our targets, and only 14% of our targets that we've planned were not achieved. And in terms of the opinion on our audit report, over three previous financial years, we've managed to achieve an unqualified audit report. Okay. If we move along to slide 22, excuse me, where we have indicated now what makes up the revenue of a CBE. Now, our revenue is categorized in three different line items. Namely, obviously, we've got a grant allocation that we get from DPW of 41.5 million. We also have levy income of 1.8 million that we receive from the professional councils. And we also receive interest income on short-term investments that we make from the grant that we receive. So unused portion is invested on shorter period until such time where we need the money, obviously we would take out the investment. And that gives us a total revenue budget of 43.5 million for the year 2014-15, which is the current financial year. Now if we compare that to the prior year, which was 2013-14, you will see that it has increased by about 10% from 37.9 million to 41.5 here in terms of the grant allocation. So there's a 10% increase there. And then in terms of the interest income, it has increased from 140,000 to 150,000, which has an increase of 7%. And in terms of levy income, we projected a 5% increase, which is from 1.7 to the 1.8. Now, if you look at the total revenue increase, it was about 9%, which is from 39.8 million in the prior year to 43.5 million in the current year.
I'm just looking, he's talking about 7%, and if you look at 140, he says minus 56.5%.
Oh, that is for comparison market of 2012 and 2013-14. So I'm comparing 2013-14 and 2014-15. So you should be looking at the other percentage for 2014-15. Do you see that? Yes. Can I proceed? Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. And then if we look at the total revenue increase would be the 9% that I've indicated, which is from 39.8 to 43.5 in the 2014-15 financial year. Now, if we go to the next slide, where we're indicating what we spend this money on, expenditure of the CBE. Now, in terms of the expenditure of the CBE, we've categorized it in terms of your compensation of employees, your goods and services, professional services, and capital assets. Now, I'll just briefly explain what we mean by goods and services in each of our programs, as well as what we mean by professional services, and of course, capital assets. Now, in terms of goods and services, we have four different programs, as indicated earlier on by the CEO. We've got a government priority program, which is our program one. We also have our skills development program, which is program two. And we also have research and information program, which is program three. And the last program is our public interest program, which is program four. Now, in terms of program one, the goods and services that we refer to in program one would include expenditure such as, you know, your bank charges, catering expenses, your computer services, consumables, council fees, you know, the lease payments for the renting of the building that we occupy, our non-life insurance premiums, stationery and equipment, telephone and communications, and also travel and accommodation. Now, those would be the typical expenses that you find under Program 1. And in Program 2, when we speak of goods and services, we're talking about the use of subject experts in, obviously, our skills development program. We also talk about other records, which normally includes our tuition fees and lodging fees. We talk about catering for workshops that we have, and also we include expenditure for metal science projects in terms of the service provider that we'd use for the project, and we also have workshops and travel and accommodation. Now, those would be the goods and services for Program 2. Now, in Program 3, which is our research and information, when we speak of goods and services, we mean our research consultants that we use, the travel and accommodation that's spent on the program. We also use panel of experts. So, we obviously would be paying panel of experts from this program as well, and we also have catering for workshops. Now, those would be goods and services for our research and information. In terms of our public interest, goods and services would include our Section 21 appeals expect that are done in terms of our CBE Act. Now, this would normally include, you know, charges for the appeals and subject matter expects. We also speak of travel and accommodation, stakeholder workshops, our conferences, fees, catering for the appeals, advertising in terms of our panel of experts database, and there's also publications in relation to the identification of work that is done under this program, which is our public interest program. Now, that would have been the good and services explained in detail under each program. Now, there's also what we call professional services, which have got a budget of about 2.5 million. Now, what makes up our professional services is our external audit fees, which is in the region of around 1.3 million. We've got internal audit fees as well, which is in the region of about 500,000. We've got recruitment costs in the region of about 300,000. We also have risk management that is also budgeted under this professional services, with a budget of about 250,000. And we also have reviews and verifications of our levies, which is budgeted under professional services with a budget of about 160,000. Now those make up our professional services program. If we look at the next one, which is our capital assets, in terms of our capital assets, we've got a budget of about 370,000. Now our capital assets is made up of your computer equipment of about 140,000, your office equipment of about 130,000, and furniture and fittings of about 100,000. Now those make up the 370,000 that's budgeted under our capital assets. And if we go along in terms on a program level, you will see that in terms of our government priorities program, we have an increase of about 13%, which would be made up of, you know, in the prior year we had a budget of 16.7 million, and in the current year we've got a budget of 19.015 million in the current year. So that obviously makes up the 13% increase within the program. And then when we move to skills program, we have a 2% increase, which is from 8.4 million to 8.6 million. So that would accommodate the 2% increase. Then we also have research and information, which has an increase of 6%, which is from 10.3 million to 10.9 million. And we also have public interest, with an increase of 16%, which is from 4.2 million to 4.8 million. Now, finally, we also had issues around cost-saving exercises that we experienced, and these were generally in three line items. One of them being the catering of our internal meetings. What we did was that we had to obviously change certain policies in terms of how we cater for internal meetings, where if a meeting is internal and is less than 5 hours, therefore we would not cater. And the only instance where we would cater on an internal meeting will be where the meeting is obviously longer than 5 hours and where participants are external members. Now those would be the only instances where we cater internally. And in terms of our travel, air travel in particular, we had reduced to obviously economic flights only for everyone, including our Hansel members. And then in terms of our telephone bill, we obviously are monitoring that on a monthly basis, and there's a limit that's allocated to the staff on a monthly basis of that. And if a staff member obviously spends more than what is allocated to them, we recollect what is above what is allowed to be spent. So there's a recollection process there on the amount that's spent above the limit. Now, lastly, in terms of program-wise, on how we spend on our budget, Program 1, which is our government priorities program, spends about 44% of our budget. Program 2, which is our skills development program, spends about 20% of our budget. And Program 3, our research and information, spends about 25% of our budget. And Program 4, which is our public interest program, spends about 11% of our budget. Now, it's obviously important to also highlight the fact that in terms of Program 1, obviously we're spending very high on Program 1, which is a 44% spending on that program, but this is because that government priorities program includes projects that are to deliver on the core business as well as support functions. So you would find instances where our general administration costs are under this Program 1, which would be your rental, you know, what I've spoken about in terms of capital assets, what I've spoken about in terms of professional fees as well, would all be under Program 1. okay? And that would also include other core business projects that would spend on program one. And Hind, we've got a 44% spending on that program. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. Colleagues, members of parliament, questions? Mrs. Adams, let's start with you, honorable member. And then I'll have the two of you, three of you, gentlemen. On, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the presentation. And I'm very grateful that the presentation was done both by male and female.
Mm-hmm.
That says that the money spent was well spent. When you come here, you must be heard. I've directed this question to the last presenter. On your government priorities program, program one, on goods and services, there is a 13% overall change, and that was for an additional machine that was, say, on slide 23. Why was the additional meeting called for? Was it necessary? And then the other question, Chairperson, I'm passionate about transformation of especially this sector of our society. On slide 26, the presenter said there's a slow pace of transformation. And then she explains what they are doing on slide 29. But I want one question to go to slide 27. The key problem regarding the professional registration. And in the first input she makes, the statement that there is a 30% tertiary graduate throughput and bottleneck at our universities. Mm. Now, Jefferson, I'm sitting here. I'm a mother of one son, and I had a son studying at Stellenbosch doing engineering, and I know the pain that these young men and women have at these universities. What is CDE? As the custodians of six professional bodies, what is CBE doing to, I see later you are supporting, but were you satisfied with this 50% and what did you do towards universities? And a question, if a candidate register for one of these six professionals, I think it's the duty of CBE to know of the registration at first year level and give the necessary support, because our country has a lack of skills development, and they should go the path. Already I see they intend going from high school, but they should focus and zoom in at university level. Then Chairperson, on slide 27, the other question I want to ask, and I'll ask it in Afrikaans. Die groot getal ongeregistreerde kandidate. Ons sien daar is byvoorbeeld 22,000 ongeregistreerde kandidate. Het CE al ingefokus na die professionele organisasies en gesê, wat veroorsaak dat daar so op een hoeveel van ongeregistreerde kandidate. Ek hoor hulle noem hierdie dinge van mense kry nie geleentheid in die werksplek nie. Maar hoe is dit vir hulle om hierdie challenges wat ons jong mense ervaar om dit uit te roep? Want ek dink daar het die crux van die probleem. Ek wil nie eens eie ervaring praat nie, maar dit is 'n probleem. Dan, ek dink ek het verlede keer ook die vraag gevra, weet jy wat vir hulle is nie? Hulle praat van ten opzichte van white African Indian colored en geografie vermoesie. Getal vrouwe, kandidaten. Youth werk, aanvaar die gemeente verwenders. Hulle moet ook kyk na die ouwe sektor en dan te suiwerd. Julle het die verantwoordelikheid om na die jeug, vrouwe en die suiwerd. Dan slide 29, I'm very encouraged, Jefferson, by what they are doing to implement transformation in the sector. And I would like them to highlight for construction. They say they have, are reading the first sentence, transformation framework for the work environment professions through skills development due to the skills pipeline model was approved by CBE in May 2013. We are in August 2014. What progress have you made already? And then I'm encouraged by number two, University Student Support Program. What do you intend to do? Will the support not only be presented for courses, you must have more academic ondersteuning van haar studenten, wees hulle letterlijke studenten aan hand vat. En hulle die nodige leiding gee. Dan die laatste ene, Jefferson, op slide nummer 17. Sê hulle daar so, report on investigation and consultation by CC on that. Now, is that what it is? There were appeals, and there's a corporate governance framework for the 6 BEPs. Now, what kinds of appeals do you usually get? How many were received? How many were not done in within 16 days? And why was there this backlog in the handling of appeals? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think the thrust of what the Honourable Member spoke in Afrikaans was in regard to a great number of candidates who qualify but do not get the requisite work opportunities in order to fully enter the profession. And then the other areas that he emphasized was what are we doing in regard to women, youth, and people with disabilities. That's my poor translation. Next was Honorable Masango.
And then we will do our poor translation in Afrikaans again. Say, thanks for the presentation. I think it's good for the second time we can hear more better than we had last time. But I just want to start by the presentation started with the lady deliverer that is happening. And I'm not sure whether she's also accepting that CDE is having part of all those poor services that we're getting from there. But she didn't tell us what she's doing, because what she thinks is true, we don't have engineers at local municipality, we don't have the right people, but she doesn't tell us what CBE is doing actually to correct all those things that are happening at municipality. I would like her actually to tell her what they are doing to correct the situation, because definitely the problem is there, but we want to know what the corrective measures that they are taking to ensure that. But also just going to transformation, President, I'm just worried when I hear all these things and you ask yourself if one of your plan is to support the priorities of government and all those things, but if you don't increase the number of engineers and all those things, then in other words, they absolutely a bottleneck with your assistance to the government priority, because you can't do anything. But yeah, I just want to check on the book that we have received. In 2014, one of their targets was report on implementation of transformation program and targets by 6 BEPCs by 31 March 2014. I just want to hear if that has been achieved or not achieved, because it's the same when you look at 2015, it's the same as they are saying in 2014. I just want to know, in 2014, did they achieve that? That's what they wanted to achieve. And with regard to slide 11, I think we are like slide 11, they spoke about the design that they are going to ensure that the designer actually is the one that will ensure job creation. But again, we don't hear what are they going to ensure that the design actually is going to ensure that there is job that is going to be done, you know, by more people rather than less people. If she can come on and indicate us what are they going to do to ensure that. Health and safety, I can still remember CIDB also spoke about health and safety. What is their work relationship with CIDU when it comes to this health and safety? Because we also have looked at this construction that they comply to health and safety. And we can see so many buildings are falling apart this nowadays. And one wonders whether there is something that is being done. Chairperson, I spoke about the names of provinces where she's going to intervene with grade 12 mathematics. But I think it is also good if we know what are those schools' names, so that sometimes we can go and do a follow-up rather than have a province where other have schools, and maybe she can tell us what criteria they use when they get to those schools to say these are the children that we are targeting for math and science so that they can do it. But the other thing is, when you look at their proposal, they are talking about from grade 8 to grade 12. But still, we want to know what is going to be the intervention at that school. You know, it's easy to identify, but then what do you do after to ensure that those children go further than that, what they were doing? And Chairperson, unless we can intervene at school level, but unless again we ensure that at this registered candidates, that bottleneck that is there, we do first with that one, then we're going to just fill so many candidates at workplace that are registered, but we don't have a real registered people. We still remain with a registered candidate. So they must just make sure that they actually do away with this bottleneck so that everybody gets registered. And then when you get the students that are coming in, the others have already gone, they are already registered. That is something that we must look at as the first priority. I think, yeah, that's not just for the center.
Honorable Masang, thank you very much, sir. Honorable Sitole. Both of them not functioning, sir. Would you kindly switch off the one? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, we must add the construction, the CPE for this information. But my concern, Chairperson, if you check, they are talking about the candidates that are registered to, but they are not accredited. But there is no proposal from the CPE. What are they going to do about it? Because they say it takes more than 10 to 12 years before they get these accreditations. What are they doing about it? That's what we want to know. And then they are talking about this. They do have a research progress in the department, their progress. But if they are talking about that, the university level, the dropout is more than 70%. 70%. What are they doing about this? Because they do have the research. They have to tell us what are they doing. What is their outcome from their research? And the other one, when you check on page 7, Chairperson, when they are talking about the public, they are talking about education of public. Do they have a problem of that education? Because they cannot just tell us that they are spending a lot of money on public education, but there is no problem. We don't have a problem on that one. And the other one, Chairperson, I don't know if that a language of is their language, because if you check on slide number 9, they are talking about public awareness. Public education, public awareness, if they can just explain what problem do they have on the transition. And the other one, Chairperson, which is the one in fact of the percentage of resistance.
75% are white, 15% are African, 6% Indians, and 4% are Arab, 91% male and 9% female. President, this is what it said. Really, if I do remember, I have been serving this Bokoro committee from 2010. This facility are still the same. There is no change in this facility. I don't know what CPD are really doing, because that's why sometimes we say this are just cut and paste scenario, because if you can, and President, go to page 27 or strike number 27 and check on bullet number 7. There are allegations of sidelining, discrimination, and the killing of black graduates in the workplace. Do the department, do the CPE have investigations about that, what is happening on that one? Because they cannot say it's an allegation, because sometimes the allegation becomes true. And the other one, Chairperson, number 10. And the result is going to bring over the country in China, in South Africa, not rich countries. Is it more than 50% at intellectual graduate, not rich countries, FACAP? What are the CP doing about this? Or are you just giving us the information, but the information, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I must say, in fairness to the presenters of CBE, when they spoke to this particular slide, they just indicated to the meeting that this is where the crux of the matter is, the number of the issue. Slide 27, where they spoke to the registered professional, 75% white, and then going down 15 African, 6 Indian, 4 colors, 91 male, 9% female. And then also in discussing what needs to be done, they just say that as opposed to the medical profession, where after graduation, graduate doctors become interns at the hospital. And at the hospital, they are taken through various medical disciplines, pediatrics, community health, preventative health, all those disciplines doctors are taken through. And then they also said that comparatively, those who become eventually chartered architects, there's also a structured program that's uniform for all. But in this particular program, the area of work, there isn't this common discipline like we have in the medical profession, in the accounting profession. So they might not have articulated it to the degree that you are sharpening what they're saying, but they did mention some of the challenges that they have there. But the issues that you raise, they noted them down, I'm sure, in their response. They would also reply to those. This is why in your rejoinder, you say that you have been a member of this portfolio committee for a number of years. When you look at the statistics on page 27, to somebody else it might look like every year we are cutting and pasting, because the information on page 27 is the same information. So that what you are raising, you are highlighting the fact that what they also highlighted, that there is very slow progress of transformation in the industry. So that's a joint challenge that we have as members of parliament. How do we lean, put pressure on the department to ensure that year after year we don't come back to the same stats? 75% white and then 3% either this or other race group. So it's a common challenge that we have. To be able to identify the problem is part of our work. But to find remedial solutions is a greater part of the work that we should be doing.
in conjunction with the department. How do we address that this state of affairs is changed? So we are all together in regards to that. I just thought I should just make that point. Thank you very much, Honorable Sithole. The next on the list was Honorable Mubu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I'll be very brief. Just also want to touch on the issue of certain construction and the incidents that we keep seeing happening, particularly around construction sites. Like yesterday, of the last incident in Johannesburg, where a number of people died because of, in my poor installation, I think poor safety standards that led to the death of those people. You mentioned that you signed an agreement with the Department of Labor and Health with regards to this. Just to what extent are these regulations and requirements enforced to continue so that we don't continue to get this kind of problem happening? The other issue related to that is the fact that from my casual observation, when you go to a construction site, we find a lot of foreigners, Zimbabweans, Mozambicans, and I think most of them really don't have the skills, the real skills that in terms of construction. But they are, in my view, employed because of cheap labor that they provide, because the Africans do not want to do some of those low jobs. What is the organization doing about this? And as a result, I think many of these are exploited by construction companies because they know they're saving on labor costs by employing people who work for nothing as long as they've got that little bread on the table. What is the organization doing about this? The issue of transformation, I think, is also very critical. My colleagues have already mentioned this. But I think it should be something that should worry us, that after so many years, we're still lagging behind in terms of promotion of black people in the different fields related to built environment. And then also the issue of budgets. If I can find my slide, can I speak to that? I think it's related to the issue that my colleague here, Honorable Masango, mentioned regarding interest received 2012-2013 compared to 2013-2014 and also the estimate 2014-2015. There seems to be a big drop between 2012-2013 from 322 to 140, and of course the differential there was 6.5%. Could you explain what that could be, what caused that big jump from year to year? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir. I think that this is an appropriate time to pause and take replies and comments from the presenters. Madam, sir, thank you very much. We are in your hands.
Chair, with your permission, if the CFO can take the last easy question on the interest.
You are lucky, man. As usual, ladies, we take the difficult questions.
Thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members. I'll start with the last question about the drop that was experienced in that year on interest received. Now, generally, in terms of that, what has happened in that year, where you see the drop, was when there was an instruction from National Treasury to obviously forbid entities from investing monies with our banks. So we were forbidden, and we were only instructed to invest surplus funds with CPD. I just remember what it is. It's the Corporation for Public Deposit. year we obviously had an issue because we had to stop any investment in that particular year. So we did not really have any investment income. The only interest we had, if you look at the audited financial statement, you'll see we had interest on current accounts, which was very small compared to what we had estimated, because we did the estimate based on investment, but we ended up not having investment in that year, because the instruction itself, it came, I think, halfway through the year, and that's when we normally would receive our first tranche of the money from DPW. So we were able to invest in that particular year. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps at the end, to address the question from Honorable Mrs. Adams about the 13% change because of an additional meeting. I think that was another finance question that she posed.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. In terms of that particular question, sorry, let me just directly look at the issue of Program 1 additional meetings for council. Now, remember in this new financial year, we have a new council. So there is obviously going to be your inauguration, and there will be a need for additional meetings in terms of briefings to the new members, because if you look at how our council is also constituted, you realize that all the members are new. There is no continuity from the previous members and all that. So there would be a need to have additional meetings due to inauguration and the fact that the council is new. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. There were a lot of questions around transformation. I've sort of grouped them into various categories, and we'll attempt to address a number of questions with an appropriate answer. There were questions around the slow throughput and the low throughput of 30% at universities. Yes, we researched that. Yes, we have identified interventions. Maybe in the presentation I didn't unpack the specific actions that we envisage in terms of the interventions that we're thinking about. At a university level, I did address the issue of access to bursaries, first of all, so that more people access the built environment profession. When students are registered at university, the 70%, and Honorable Adams did say that the students, they work very, very hard in those programs, in those faculties, they work very, very hard. And yet we still have the 70% problem that we have of people that don't graduate. I did mention the SAICA, the chartered accountants, they've got a program called Tuduka. And we want to fashion our interventions. This does not exist yet, but what we want to do is an academic support program, for example, at university level, whereby we identify all the students in the faculties that are of interest to our sector. We make sure that students have got extra tutorials. We make sure that we address issues like access to proper accommodation, because these are the things that impact on the students' abilities and on the students' results. To make sure that the students that are in the built environment, they've got vacation jobs. They are able to, during school holidays, to be aligned and to be assigned to industry, so that what they learn in class, they can see it in practical terms, you know, live that be inspired to do better in their studies and in the sector. We want to make sure that by the time a student arrives, day one, when they come, they have their books, their whole pack there. They've got access to lab equipment. They do practicals. They get extra support, academic support. They get, because these are young people, they also get mentors, and they get, you know, counseling even on social issues, because it doesn't just end with, you know, what you read in the book. It's about your whole being, it's about your whole career, it's about the socio-economic environment where you come from as well, to get that, those types of package support. And as I say, we're lucky in that the Tutua program already does this for abundance. So we're going to fashion our model along that successful model. So it's a suite of interventions that we've got in mind. And I think you said, Honorable Member, this framework was approved in May 2013. And to date, because, first of all, it was middle of the year, so we had to plan for it, for budgeting, for transformation-related interventions in this current year. So in terms of resourcing that area, we're busy with resourcing that area. But I must mention that the minister, the day after his presentation, his budget vote, the following day, the minister had the industry to discuss transformation in the construction sector and in the built environment. And a task team was formed consisting of unions, consisting of the private sector players, consisting of CIDB, CBE, and the Construction Charter Council. And this task team, it met last week to chart the way for transformation across the entire value chain of the sector. There were questions, for example, about cheap labor and the use of cheap labor, unsafe practices, etc., etc. The union representatives are very vocal on those issues. And in the task team, we've got specific interventions that this transformation task team is going to drive to address the labor-related issues. There are issues of bargaining council in the sector, etc. They talk to transformation broadly within the issue. And with respect to the CBE's mandate, which is the professionals, the model that I presented is the intervention tool. We said that in this model, we've got a workplace training model that, first of all, for the first time, it is quality assured. We want to make sure that each and every person in the workplace, they've got a training plan that they report on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, so that we know that people are doing the proper activities within the workplace that will enable them to progress from being perpetual candidates and trainees to become fully fledged and competent professionals. So the workplace training model, saying we're going to take somebody to ESCOM, we've got an agreement with the site in Limpopo, the Lephala site, for example, where we're going to take candidates. We've already identified candidates. 50 candidates have been identified. We've already identified sites where we're going to take them. We've already identified sites with Water Affairs, and we've agreed with Water Affairs which sites we're going to take people to get proper training and exposure in the water infrastructure space. Water Affairs also has an academy, a proper academy with Rainwater that they run in order to train specifically civil engineers, and we've identified people that are going to participate in those programs. We've identified 50 candidates all in all, and we've identified 100 interns that are going to be placed in various projects for proper and supervised workplace training. Within this workplace training model, we also go to train mentors, because what we find is that currently, with the current system, the mentors actually they do what they do. Other mentors are good and they really take people through the ranks. Other mentors, they actually de-skill people. They don't take them through the necessary program. We now going to have a quality assurance mechanism of making sure that the mentors, first of all, are trained themselves. Secondly, that the mentors report to us, back to us. And then they account for the candidate's progress. Also, in terms of assessment, there will be independent assessors of the state of readiness of a particular candidate. So if with a particular mentor, consistently their candidates are found to be not ready, then we'll deal with that mentor. We'll replace that mentor. At the moment, mentors report to God. They don't report to anyone. They just do what they do. And sometimes we have a system, for example, of logbooks. And sometimes you can see that this logbook for this candidate was actually filled the same day before, because the shade of the ink is the same. You can see that this was just a rush job. This person never went through these things. But now, on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, we don't have a system that tells us throughout the country, this is the state of affairs with regards to each and every individual candidate regarding their training. So it's a better managed system. It's going to be also a quality assured system, which is a fact. So that is how this model is going to practically be implemented. In terms of the schools and the interventions at schools, we also did mention that the criteria is similar to the criteria used by basic education in terms of the resource schools and the under-resource schools. We've taken the same criteria and used it to support the least resource schools, and we'll give the names of the schools. We'll also give the names of the students in each and every school. What we did is that per province, we identified 12 schools, and we're taking 2 students per school, so as to spread the footprint. Instead of just taking one school in a province, we're wanting to benefit as many schools as possible. So we take them to a central point to support them in math and science education. The other intervention that we're going to be doing is to get mobile labs to schools. Because we've also found that in terms of science and access to lab, there is a big problem. So the program that we currently have is supplementing math and science education. But the next program from mid-year is these mobile science labs that have got a lab technician that's going to use the same lab and the same material from school to school. And therefore, we hope to reach more students using that method. So those are the kinds of programs that we're doing at a schools level. The bottlenecks with regards to registered candidates progressing into fully-fledged professionals, it is the crux of the matter, e-workplace training. I've outlined what are the things that we're going to do to implement that new model of making sure that the people that come out of the system, we are sure in the country of that they are competent, that they've been exposed to the right workplace training, and that they are registered. Because the problem is that we need to be certain that whoever gets registered is indeed does indeed qualify for registration. The service delivery process and what is the CPE doing about that? Honorable Matango, the issue is that our interest in this matter is that we are saying that these service delivery process, they are about our products. So, inevitably and indirectly, we as the built environment professions and professionals, we are part of this problem. But when the handicraft solutions, we are saying we need to be part of the solution as well. So when, for example, we've had interactions with MISA, which is the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. This is an agency that reports to COCTA and is looking at technical capacity at municipalities. We're in partnership with COCTA in terms of them providing people from municipalities that we can put as part of our workplace training program, for example. Some of the people that are going to be in the pilot project are from municipalities, select municipalities. So we went hand in hand with COCTA to make sure that even issues like the organogram of a municipality, to say that if a municipality has got 1 million people, this is how many engineers that should be in that municipality. These are the quantity surveyors that must be there to make sure that there are no cost overruns in those infrastructure programs, etc., etc., etc. So we're sitting with MISA to look at municipalities, to look at what is optimum for municipalities. For example, also there was a question about what are we doing with all the people that are not registered with the professional. We have what is called the identification of work that we are discussing with the Competition Commission. It's mentioned as one of the interventions. What the identification of work seeks to do is to say that if you're in this category of registration, this is the type of work that you're competent to do, that you should do as a professional. So it's to protect the public from somebody that doesn't have in-depth knowledge or competency in a particular activity, dabbling into something that they are not fully aware with. So we are trying to get everyone to get into the proper workplace training, the proper registration pool. We are only piloting at the stage, but we want to expand this model so that it covers everyone that graduates in our sector. That is the plan for the future. But it's early days. We're now just piloting these ideas so that we will be able to fine-tune that and implement and roll out a model that we know is practical at a bigger scale for the country. In terms of the cut and paste of statistics, Honorable Scholar, that's not the case. What we have here is the statistics as they are. You'd actually see that in 2013 September, for example, the statistics, when we were presenting to the minister, we're using the 2013 September statistics. The statistics at that point were actually worse but the statistics was 80% white. It was, and then it was 11% African, and then the balance was Indian and colored. So the statistics are changing. They're changing very slowly. That is the exact point to say that the statistics are standing still. They're not moving. If they are moving, they're moving very, very slowly. It's not a cut and paste exercise. It's the statistics at a particular point. That is the picture of the industry. It is bad. It is sad. That is the truth of our situation, Honorable Chain members. Then the transformation target of the six councils. Chair, I must say that you saw that in our performance, we had in 13-14, 86% of the targets achieved and 14% of the targets not achieved. And I'm sad to say that one of the targets that were not achieved was this very target of the six councils defining the transformation targets going forward. I think, as I suggested the previous time, I think it would be important to get the six professional councils to directly address this house in terms of the interventions that they are doing in their respective sector with regards to transformation. What are those initiatives? What are they yielding? What are these targets? This year, we are still very committed to making sure that we commit them to a target. Because without that target, we're not going to be able to move from these statistics that are confronting us. So, Chair, it is also a matter of mandate. There are things that we can do as the CBE and as the umbrella body, but there are things that a specific council is better able to do than ourselves. So I suggest that they also, get an opportunity to define what are the things that they are doing. What we have committed is that we will support transformation programs as the CPE, and we will also, even within our limited funding, even financially support transformation initiatives using our own budget in those professional councils, because they'll make the overall picture look a little bit better than what it currently is. I've tried to cover all the issues with a response. Jefferson, I don't know whether I need to still elaborate on a particular issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Madam. I think you did very well. members and the others who are with us here, all of them look rested and drowsy now. So you must have done something right. On another occasion, perhaps there is an issue that I would just like you to think about. What's the reception now? There are people with university qualifications versus those with qualifications from technicons. The general public tends to recognize qualifications from universities more than those from technicals. So as the next time we engage, you can just give us your empirical experience as to what's the situation in regard to this.
Chair, actually I can address that matter now.
Very briefly.
Yes. Chair, it's not a problem at all in the sector, in that if you study the technicon, with that qualification, your registration category is different from if you've studied at university. It's like in engineering, for example, if you have a BSc in engineering, you register as a PRN, and if you've got a diploma in engineering, you register as an engineering technologist. And if you studied at a technical, you register as an engineering technician. So your registration is according to your academic base.
Thank you very much. At our last engagement, I did say that the nature of your work is such and the nature of Parliament's responsibility is such that the ideal situation is that we don't meet once per year when you come and give almost an annual report as to what you've done over the past year, which is like listening to a post-mortem. But we have an ongoing relationship. We have had the opportunity, privilege of listening to you on two occasions. There's a better sense that you in turn have as to where members are in regard to understanding your challenges, in regard to understanding the responsibilities that members of Parliament have, oversight over the department, the ministry, and its entities. So that there's that dialogue of responsibility. So we hope to continue this on an ongoing basis. We won't wait for another year end to call you back. But as we move, as we look at the scope and the remit of your work, represent the engagement. At times we might just phone and say provide members information in regard to a particular issue. Or if there's breaking news on a particular issue that members feel strongly about. Members alluded to the issue of health and safety in the built industry environment. So it might be an issue that we need to build. And then also progress with regard to the accreditation of people who have qualified, then it might also be an issue, a broader issue that we obviously discuss with yourself, you as an entity being at the coalface, but you also escalate to the level of the ministry and the department as a whole. There are a number of entities in this environment who tender for work from government. And they do get work. But one of the prescripts that we might need to introduce is that one of the requirements for qualifying for a specific tender would be for the entity to prove how many interns, qualified people they've taken on board and how many of them are accredited today. A year or 2 years hence. So that becomes a requirement for all of them who apply for jobs and say that, no, this is one of the specs that you have to reply to. What have you done in the past? How many people have you been able to train? Have you been able to provide with experiential work experience? So that it becomes a requirement. Otherwise, this will be an issue that we correctly identify, but we don't have measures in place to actualize that they really perform the AC. So if people know that there's this multi-million or billion contract, but one of the issues that I have to meet is like your BEE requirements. Also in the profession, how many graduates do you take from graduate level to accredited level? So we need to look at those synergies. What needs to be done? There are measures that you are speaking to, but there are measures that can be made into law or regulation for members of parliament. Responsibility of members of parliament is not just to pilot legislation through parliament,
but is to look at existing laws, regulations, how they've been applied in practice. Is there, are there blind spots, are there unintended consequences that need to be remedied? That's where the role of members of parliament come in and say that. In terms of practice, practitioners, the department, stakeholders themselves have said, yeah, a short force. And then it's their responsibility to formulate the requisite legislation to deal with those weaknesses out there. So it's an ongoing dynamic responsibility that Parliament has in regards to laws as they exist and as they are finding expression in practice. So this partnership is such that it will have to be a vibrant one that continues. Having said that, good folks, I would like to thank one and all for your attendance. And the presenters, we know that going to present to Parliament is like going to write an exam. You never know if you've got all the relevant parts there. Are you going to say enough about this or something you leave out and somebody asks, what about this? So we do appreciate your position there. You can't make a presentation that caters for each and every aspect. This is why in your rejoinder when you speak to certain aspects. So we appreciate that. But the role of members of parliament is to ask those probing questions. It's not that they want to be nasty to the presenters or that they want to be different. It's their job. We sit on different sides of the table, but ultimately the work that we do is to achieve a common objective, to work in the best interest of the ordinary people of this country, men and women there. How do we make their lives better? That's the responsibility that we have. All of us within these four walls, we are privileged, we've got jobs, but there are people there without jobs. Quite a number of them are even better qualified than all of us are, but they are without jobs. So we cannot undermine the privileged positions that all of us have. We have to work, put together all our strength, our skills, in the best interest of the ordinary people of this country, all of them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Until next time. Greatly appreciated. Alcona says that the two unfortunate gentlemen without ties, she will spread when is their birthday so that we have a collection boat to assist them to get ties when they come to the portfolio committee. When they go and play golf, it's another day. Or when they are washing their cars, it's fine. But yeah,